Hi, this is Alonzo Bowden. I want to welcome you to episode 345 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? This is one more done from the home office. I believe next week we will be back in studio with guests. But thank you guys for continuing to listen, continuing to support, and I appreciate it. So you can't take a day without hearing something Joe Rogan said, Joe Rogan did, Joe Rogan this, Joe Rogan that. You know what? I'm not going to talk about Joe Rogan anymore. I'm not going to worry about Joe Rogan anymore. You know where I stand on this. While we're talking about Joe Rogan, the Supreme Court has taken another step to gut the Voting Rights Act. We have books being banned, education being banned in schools, et cetera, et cetera. During Black History Month, let's take away the right of Black people to vote and let's do away with Black history. Let's do away with Black history during Black History Month. Why? Because we're talking about Joe Rogan. Oh, and then we have the Canadian trucker protests, which is going way beyond Canada. And yeah, that's another one to unpack, something else to look at. And there are so many things more important in the world right now than Joe Rogan, and many would say that's why they're steering us to talk about Joe Rogan. Was Joe Rogan wrong to drop N-bombs years ago? Absolutely. Everything about Joe Rogan they say true, I don't care. I'm done. Can we move on? Just, if you don't like Joe Rogan, turn it off. Don't listen. That's fine. Okay. Let's get to the few things that I did want to talk about on the podcast this week. I don't know if I call it who's paying attention. Are we paying attention to the Voting Rights Act, to the destruction of the Voting Rights Act? But basically, back in 1965, after the Civil Rights Act, the government knew that the South, they knew what they were up to. So they wrote this Voting Rights Act to give people a right to vote and to protect people's right to vote. Now, this is one of those things where they talk about state rights versus federal rights, and states run elections, cities run elections, etc. But because, and this is, it's almost comical how well they knew it. Those who wrote this act, when this act was made into law, this is how well they knew the South. They specifically put in states by name that said, you cannot change your voting rules. You can't change your maps, your district. You can't do anything without the approval of the federal government. Because we know if we give you the chance, if we give you the chance, you're going racist. If we give you the chance, if we give you the freedom to run your own elections, you're going to do it the worst way possible. The Voting Rights Act has been gutted by the Supreme Court over the years, and sure enough, as if by name, listen to the states they were talking about: Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, Virginia. And these are the states where we see this rewriting of the voting rules. Georgia just passed that crazy voting bill with ID, and you can't bring water to people who are waiting in line and all of this. Now, Alabama has done this redistricting to prevent Black people from voting. Okay. So basically what they did was they redrew their districts. Okay. So what they did was they put Black voters into one big district that stretches from Birmingham to Montgomery, okay? And then they distributed the few remaining voters of color through six majority white districts. What does that mean? That means that in these districts, there's no way a Black person can win. So Black Americans make up 27% of the... Oh, by the way, Mitch McConnell, Those would be Black Americans, not African Americans who vote just like Americans, but actual Black people who are American. You got to clear that up for Mitch, because Mitch doesn't understand how that works. Anyway, Black people make up 27% of the population of Alabama, and they control 14% of its congressional delegation. Okay, so that's what's done. They created these. If you ever look at them, if you could physically look at a map, you'll see how these districts are drawn. They're shaped pretty weird. It's not local. It's not like a circle with this many people. It's like this weird shape that has people from here and here, and it's all done all based on a racial makeup to make sure there's only one district with a Black majority, and to make sure there's no way there's Black majorities in the other ones. So this is something called the Gingles test, okay? And it requires a three-judge district court to determine whether a redistricting plan carves up minority communities to prevent them from electing a candidate of their choice. Okay, so that's what it says. You cannot divide up minority communities to prevent them from electing the candidate of their choice. Okay, so this is exactly what they did in Alabama. They divided up the Black people into districts so they can't elect the candidate of their choice. Okay, remember, this is what's going on while we're worried about Joe Rogan. Worried about Joe Rogan. This is what's going on. Now, it was so bad that even Justice Roberts joined the liberal. Supreme Court is political. So let's just say liberal versus conservative justices. He joined the liberals because this was so obviously done. But because Trump got to put three justices on, Kavanaugh, Mr. I Like Beer, and Amy the Handmaid. So what they talked about, the reason that they allow Alabama to do this, okay, is a thing called the Purcell Principle. Okay, the Purcell Principle counsels federal courts against altering voting rules on the eve of an election. Now, that's a key word, on an eve of the election. So what they're saying is they don't want the court to change the rules of voting right before an election. And Kavanaugh is saying that this applies in Alabama. Well, it would apply in Alabama, except Alabama's primary isn't until May and the general election isn't until November. So changing, looking at the case now isn't exactly a last minute thing. Okay, you've got from February to November isn't, you're trying to change rules at the last minute. This is the same stretch of time that Mitch McConnell used when he wouldn't even look at a Supreme Court justice nominated by Barack Obama, saying, it's too close to the election. How the hell is February too close to the election in November? Okay, even forget about May, November. So they applied this Purcell rule. It immunizes gerrymanders from judicial review. Okay? Why? Because there's always an election coming up. So if you say that you can't look at these gerrymandering of districts because the election is, we're on the eve of an election, which isn't until May or November, aren't you saying, in effect, that you can never look at these? Isn't there always an election coming? If you use a 9-month principle, if you use 9 months as being the, quote, eve of an election, well, there's always an election within 9 months. This is what's going on, okay? This is what we're looking at. This is what's happening while we're wasting time talking about podcasters, okay? This is big. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 will effectively be dismantled by this Supreme Court. They've been doing it step by step, and now that they have this supermajority, basically, on the court, even though there's going to be a new justice, even if a liberal justice comes on, there's going to be no one, the numbers won't change. The conservatives will have this majority for a long time to come, okay, for a long time to come. And Of course, you know who voted against black people voting. Clarence Thomas, because his wife told him to. This is very real. This is what's going on right now. We are watching the Voting Rights Act of 1965 be dismantled piece by piece. Okay. And this Supreme Court's going to keep doing it. Yes, they're going to get to abortion. I don't know if they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. They will definitely allow states. They're already doing it. Texas, Mississippi, and just look at the list. Look at the list from the Voting Rights Act. Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, Virginia. Add Texas and you'll see this is what's going on. And this Supreme Court, all of that. We don't want legislating from the bench and all of that talk from the Republicans. It's all bullshit. Okay, they have the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is definitely politicized. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court is now religious, right? You got the Handmaiden on there, and they're destroying things one by one. But this Voting Rights Act of 1965, that's what's so comical to me about it. What's so comical about it, they nailed it. They knew so well what they were going to do. They listed the states by name that were going to have unfair, racist voting rules if they were allowed to make their own rules. The federal government said, if we let them make their own rules, they're going to make some terrible rules. They're going to draw up some terrible districts. They're going to make sure black people can't vote. They knew this in 65, and here it is in 2022. They're being proven absolutely right. What else is going on while we're worried about Joe Rogan and the podcast? Do you have Spotify? Most of the people complaining don't. They don't even have Spotify. So they're not even listening to the guy who they want banned. But it's not important. It's not important. The important thing is we got to shut this man down. We got to ban Joe. So, yes, I'm being facetious. But here's another thing I want you to look at. The book bans. This is very real. This is not maybe or this or that. This is very real, okay? These are, and this is just some of the books on the list of 50 books that Texas parents want banned from school libraries. Why is it big? As always, Texas is, when it comes to schools, Texas has the biggest school districts. Texas buys the most school books. Texas kind of leads the way on a lot of parts of education, particularly books. So they've got, this is the list of 50 books. This isn't the list. This is some of the list. These are just some that I picked out from this list of 50 books that they want banned from school libraries. How about a book titled When Wilma Rudolph Played Basketball? And this book is about the racism that Olympian Wilma Rudolph experienced growing up in Tennessee in the 1940s. And they said it should be banned because it opines prejudice based on race. That is the exact purpose of the book, to talk about prejudice based on race, because kids should know about prejudice based on race. They want that book gone. Another book, Lawn Boy, okay? Lawn Boy is a coming-of-age novel about a Mexican-American kid's journey to understanding his own sexuality and ethnic identity. It should be banned because it contains profanity, pornography, gambling, and homosexuality. Really? So does the Super Bowl, being played this Sunday. I'm just picking some of the list, okay? This is what we're ignoring because, you know, Joe Rogan. The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison. Yes, that Toni Morrison. The award-winning, Nobel Prize-winning author, Toni Morrison. Okay? This book should be banned because it contains a graphic description of rape. You know what? We need a graphic description of rape. We need to know how terrible rape is, so maybe little boys will learn to not rape. I will never forget that. That was a powerful statement I read in talking about rape culture. It said, rather than teaching girls how not to dress, how about teaching boys not to rape? So maybe a graphic description of the horror of rape would help. Ghost Boys, a book by Jewel Parker Rhodes. This is great. According to a Houston parent, reading this novel about a black boy killed by police might cause white children who attend the Spring Branch Independent School District to, quote, feel ashamed based on the color of their skin. Yeah, forget about how the black kids might feel being shot by the police. Wouldn't want the white kid to feel ashamed. Again, let's just keep going. This one, and I believe this one was made into a movie or a TV show. I've definitely heard of this book. Yeah, it was made into a movie. Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. They said this book, which is about the relationship between a teenage boy and a girl with leukemia, includes obscene language and could lead students to become over-sexualized and objectified. The book's about two kids with leukemia dying who fall in love, and you think they're going to be objectified somehow? Here's one, and we need to, I mean, it's easy to see why this one made the list. The book is called Michelle Obama, Political Icon. We kind of knew they'd want to ban this one in Texas. They want to ban this one because it unfairly depicts Donald Trump as a bully. And it gave the impression that if you sound like a white girl, you should be ashamed of yourself. I'm laughing. They actually want to ban a book called Racism, Anti-Racism, and You. The book is about teaching anti-racism, and they say it makes it seem as if all historical events of the past were the result of racism. Yeah, well, guess what? Another book they want to ban, New Kid, okay? Because this book's about a black seventh grader at a mostly white school. And, oh my God, this book has references to microaggressions and critical race theory. Those are the race ones. There's just as many books here that they want to ban because they deal with homosexuality. Okay. There's a book called All Boys Aren't Blue. They want to ban that one because it has descriptions of molestation. Yeah, they wouldn't want a kid to learn about that while they're being molested. Genderqueer. They want to get rid of that because, wow, this one, it has sexually explicit cartoon images. Again, they're not talking about these books for four-year-olds. This is for middle schools. Okay, the kids who are going through, this is what's really funny. While kids, while kids are going through adolescence, they want to ban books that have to deal with going through adolescence, okay? Another book that's somewhat famous that they want to ban, The Kite Runner. The Kite Runner by Khaled Hosseini. A novel about an unlikely friendship between a wealthy Afghan boy and the son of his father's servant, okay? And a book called It's Perfectly Normal. It's Perfectly Normal, an illustrated guide to puberty, sex, and sexual health. And they want to ban it. Why? Because it's not appropriate for middle schoolers. Well, who's going through puberty learning about sex and sexual health? Oh, I don't know. Middle schoolers? Okay. A book about transgender teens. They want banned. A novel, Monday's Not Coming, about the unexplained disappearance of a black teenager. They want to ban that one. And again, I can just keep going on and on and on. A book called I Am Jazz, a children illustrated children's book about a transgender child based on the real life experience of one of the authors. Gotta go. Gotta go. Here's one. It boggles the mind. A book called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. The book, in which the author interviews people who've been shamed on the internet, touches on sensitive subjects, including rape and suicide, flagged for removal. How many stories do we have of this actually happening? Not in a book, actually happening. Kids bullied on the internet to the point they kill themselves. This is a real thing. So now you have a book about it. They interview people who have been involved in it, what it feels like, maybe stopping a kid from doing it, maybe letting a kid know that if he is being bullied, he's not the only one, maybe letting him know where he or she can get help, whatever. They want to ban the book. They don't want you to know that you're not the only one being bullied on the internet. These are the parents. These are the parents in these various school districts. All this, and listen, you could pick Texas. Go back to the list. Texas, Tennessee banned a book. Alabama, Mississippi, whatever. Finally, a book, 47, by Walter Mosley. Novel about a young slave boy who becomes swept up in a struggle for his own liberation. Yeah, you want to ban that. You don't want a book about a slave kid who wants to be free. Wouldn't want them to learn that. All this going on, this is what we're dealing with. But what are we talking about? Joe Rogan. What about Joe? Again, I'm not saying Joe is without sin. Believe me, he's a friend. I know him. Joe's said some fucked up things over the years. He's apologized. He's, as another friend said, he's evolving. He has been evolving. And that's all. It is what it is. But that's not, I mean, they're talking about banning books in schools. You're worried about a podcaster. Finally, I haven't talked much about this, but here it is. Anyone who's listened to me, who's watched my career, had anything to do with me, knows how much I love Canada. I was discovered at Just for Laughs in 1997. I've been going to Canada for the past 20-something years. I love Canada. I've been lucky enough to meet Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada. It is an amazing place. The nicest people I've ever met. People who are so nice that we joke about how nice they are. Well, as you know, there's been a protest going on. Canadian truckers have clogged up the capital city of Ottawa, parking their trucks to block roads, running the engines, honking the horns, making noise, blocking traffic. This has been financed. Here's the thing about this. The so-called freedom convoy, right? Whenever they talk about freedom, you might want to watch it. Because as one person wrote in an editorial, what about the freedom of the people who live in Ottawa? Now, here's another thing about this so-called freedom convoy and what they're protesting vaccination mandates across Canada. They're protesting the vaccination mandate to come back into Canada. So if you drive your truck and deliver some goods to the U.S., you have to be vaccinated to get back into Canada. Well, 90% of the truckers are vaccinated. It's only 10% unvaccinated. They try to make this seem like it's a bigger number than it is, and it's really not. A lot of the money is coming from the United States. These guys have been supported by Trump and Ted Cruz and a bunch of Trumpers, and they've been sending a lot of money. So they raised $7 million through GoFundMe. But GoFundMe said, no, we're not doing this. We're not sending the money because this protest isn't a protest. It's a city under siege. Okay, just think about the other side. Think if progressives did this over climate change, they'd be wondering why haven't they been shot yet? Okay, so GoFundMe's like, no. So they have another site similar to GoFundMe. It's a right-wing site. It's called Give, Send, Go. Same thing, crowdsourcing, raising money. They've raised over $4.5 million. A lot of it, probably most of it coming from the United States, right wing, from the Trumpers. That's who's giving the money to keep this thing going. Well, now they're moving it. Besides Ottawa, they want to block the bridge between Windsor, Canada, and Detroit. Okay, this is the busiest border crossing between Canada and the United States. This is where business is done. Okay, this is the border crossing where the car manufacturers in Detroit get a lot of work done in Canada and vice versa. Literally hundreds of millions of dollars pass in commerce, pass back and forth across this bridge. This is a big deal. Okay, the Ambassador Bridge, which connects Detroit and Windsor, carries around 27% of all trade between the U.S. and Canada. 27% of the trade. Car manufacturers are already saying that they're going to have to shut down and lay people off because there's a thing, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but it's called just-in-time manufacturing. And it's been done for quite a long time. They don't keep a huge stockpile of parts. They get the parts delivered just in time to put the cars together. Well, as you know, there's been a big problem with the supply chain. Now, what do you think happens to the supply chain when the truckers block a bridge that is responsible for 27%, over one-fourth of the commerce between the United States and Canada crosses this bridge, and they block it? What do you think happens? Car manufacturers can't get the parts, can't manufacture the cars, got to stop, got to shut that down. Not making cars, price of cars is going up, blah, 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 blah. Of course, it's all Obama's fault. Well, now they're starting to blame Biden for this sort of thing, but it's really not. It's really not. Okay, it has nothing to do with them. This is directly funded by extreme right-wing people who have some kind of paranoia about the coronavirus, about vaccinations, etc. And it is affecting commerce. It's going to affect everybody. They're basically holding hostages here. Okay? Again, this is, oh, by the way, this isn't going to just be in Canada, because now that they saw that they could choke Canada with this, they're looking at doing it in various places around the world. There's a bunch of demonstrators in New Zealand who are trying to do it. Okay, they're setting up a convoy to the Capitol. What are they carrying? Trump 2024 flags, probably made in China, by the way. Just a little side note. Yeah, and we're talking about Joe Rogan. They're choking off a bridge that has over one quarter of the commerce between Canada and the United States. And we're worried because Joe Rogan said nigger 5, 6, 11 years ago. This is real. This is what's going on. Who's paying attention? I call my podcast that. Who's paying attention? No one. No one. I mean, I heard Pete Davidson said that Kim Kardashian is his official girlfriend. So that's important. That's important. We'll stay on top of that story. Okay. Yeah. Another black man shot, hunted down and shot by two white men in Mississippi. Black FedEx driver. Delivering packages, doing his job. Okay, two white men attacked him, fired shots. Didn't kill him, but they tried. But, you know, Joe Rogan. Yeah. This guy, can you imagine this? Okay, FedEx guy stops his truck. Now he gets out of the driveway. This one driver starts driving on the grass, trying to cut him off. So now he's trying to get out of the neighborhood. He drives down about two or three houses. Another guy standing in the middle of the street, pointing a gun at him, telling him to stop. And he's like, he ain't stopping. So he swerves around him. The guy starts firing shots at him. Calls the police. Police don't take him seriously. Police don't even care. Yeah. This, that, see, that, That's racism. See, when a black man is working, doing his job, delivering packages for FedEx, and two white guys just figure, hey, there's a black guy in the neighborhood in a truck, let's shoot him. That's racism. That matters more. Ask the guy who was shot at, what do you think of Joe Rogan? Probably not high on his radar. Yeah. The fuck, people? Can we look at the real things going on? Somebody said to me, well, Joe Rogan has a responsibility because he has 11 million listeners. He has 11 million listeners to entertain. That's what he does. He entertains. You can like him or not like him. You don't have to be 11 million in one. But if you're in Alabama, you would like to vote. Okay. If your kids are in school, you'd like them to have access to books, not just the books that someone else said they should have, but books that they could use, particularly if your child is different in any way, meaning possibly gay or transgendered or minority or some child that would feel like, wow, there's no one like me. And you get to read a book and say, hey, I'm not the only one. No, we got to do away with those books. Why? Because that book might make a white child feel bad. And the white child is just as innocent. They're a child also. They're not feeling bad. They're learning. Maybe they'll feel better. Maybe they'll learn or have some empathy as to what it's like to be the outsider, to be the one who's different. But no, let's do away with all of that. Let's do away with that. Do away with that information, because that's what you're doing when you get rid of books. Now, the only good thing is when they attempt to ban a book, it boosts the sales of that book. So I hope that these kids get to read these books. I hope these kids get to learn. I was a nerd. I don't know if I was a nerd, but I definitely never felt comfortable when I was a kid. I never felt comfortable. I had friends, played a little ball, hung out, smoked and did drugs, which was a big mistake, but it is what it is, you know. But reading was my escape. Reading was how I learned so much, so much. And did I read about different people? Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. And I was a black kid who went to white schools, you know, and we were different and we went through that. And the whole sexual thing, God, I could have used such an education in this that I didn't get. I wasn't aware. I didn't read. I didn't learn. But we're more aware now. We're supposed to be. We're supposed to be more open now. And to ban a book about internet bullying, when internet bullying is killing kids, is utter fucking insanity. And you're bothering me with what a podcaster said? You got to be kidding. You got to be kidding. When white men are chasing down black men in the streets, shooting them, killing them, trying to kill him? Tried to kill him. Why? Well, he's delivering a FedEx package. Probably had the nerve to complain their package was late after they shot at the guy. I don't give up, but it ain't easy. When you talk about who's paying attention, when you talk about misinformation, when you talk about fake news and all that bullshit, okay? This whole trucker thing, this is fake news. They're not the majority. They do not speak for the majority. Are you aware? And I learned this term. I didn't know about this. I learned. How'd I learn? Reading. Troll farms. I've heard a little about this, but what it is specifically, organized groups that weaponize social media to spread misinformation, promote division, and influence public opinion. In the run-up to the 2020 U.S. election, Facebook's most popular pages for Christian and Black American content were run by Eastern European troll farms. I always say, if you're online and you post something and you see the troll come at you, see how many followers they have. And if you see 0 followers, 1 followers, 2, that's a troll. That's not a person. It's a bot. That's who you're arguing with. That's why I don't argue with my friend Michael Yo. Great comic, great radio personality. I love this guy. Talented, funny, smart. He says, I post and ghost. Post and ghost. Put it down there. I ain't reading the comments. I like that. Post and ghost. Michael Yo, Y-O is how it's spelled. And speaking of comics and friends and people worth listening to, I'm one this week. We're going to pull the interview from my friend Leo Flowers. Leo's a comic, but Leo is so much more than that because he works also as a life coach and he deals with depression. He deals with changing. He has lost in his lifetime over 100 pounds, you know, from when he was playing college ball and he was a big guy. And now he's very healthy, eats very healthy. He also almost got trapped outside of the country. He tells a great story of what it took to get back home when the pandemic first started and the country was being locked down. He had to run back, but he made it. So we're going to play the interview that I did on KBLA with Leo Flowers. Leo's a great guy. He has great information. People, please start paying attention to what's real. Okay, listen, social media bullshit, celebrity bullshit is just that. It's fine. It's fun. It's fun to read about Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian, or, you know, they released the Oscar nominees this week and people are arguing over should Lady Gaga have been nominated or blah, blah, blah. You know, Denzel is nominated once again. Hope he wins. But and all of that is great. There's nothing wrong with that. OK, but let's look at what's real. And if somebody tells you that, you know, some podcaster said this or some celebrity said that, ask them about voting in Alabama or Georgia. Let's see what's more important. Who's paying attention? You are. I absolutely appreciate it. I love you guys. I'm back out this weekend. Thursday night, I'm going to be in Hollywood at Supernova Comedy. Friday, I'm in Orange County at the Brea Improv. Saturday, I'm going to be at the Hollywood Improv. I love my job. I appreciate you guys for listening and help me do it. A lot of you ask, how's the Hulk? Right next to me, sleeping, doing what the Hulk does. Who's paying attention? You are, and I appreciate it. Thank you. This is Alonzo Bowden. The show is called Who's Paying Attention? The station is KBLA Talk 1580. We are unapologetically progressive. The phone number 800-920-1580. As always, I invite you to join the conversation and I invite you to download the KBLA 1580 app. You can listen to all of our shows. You can leave your comments through the open mic feature. It is a fantastic way to stay in touch with KBLA. And you want to stay in touch with KBLA. A couple of hot things going on right now. We are in the center of it. Today, Tavis Smiley interviewed Larry Elder. And if you want to hear that interview, you can pick it up at KBLA.com. You can listen to the podcast through Anchor or Spotify. Trust me, this is fire when Tavis talks to Larry Elder, because Tavis, as you know, is a brilliant interviewer and he's not going to let Larry dance around the issue. So that is fantastic. It is something you definitely want to listen to. And tomorrow morning, Dominique has Governor Newsom. That's right, Gavin Newsom, who's under pressure with this recall going on. He will be on Dominique's show at 8:45 tomorrow morning. You want to tune in. You want to get the KBLA 1580 app so you can listen in. Listen, the recall election is coming up. You want to be informed. You want to be ready. You want to use your vote. Remember how powerful the vote is, people. If it wasn't so powerful, they wouldn't try to stop you from doing it. As you know, all across the country, people are trying to stop us from voting. So be informed and be a voter. Right now, I'm going to bring on another very special guest. I was just talking with Heather White. She was talking about Trillfit Wellness, and she combines wellness and hip hop, which is fantastic. It makes workouts fun, something to do. This next man, he's a friend of mine. He is multifaceted, and we're going to use a little bit of everything we have here, because this man, he is a fitness trainer, so I know he can talk about that. He's a comedian. He's a very funny guy, and I love that about him. But he also has a master's in counseling and psychology and hosts a podcast called Before You Kill Yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, Leo Flowers.
What's up,
wow,
Leo?
Thanks for having me, brother. What's going on, man? I feel much more accomplished hearing it come out of your mouth.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you this. You are following Heather White, so you got a tough act to follow right here, because Trill Fitz, she's killing it, and Danny Morrison's not even listening anymore because he's just perusing her Instagram. So, Leo, with all due respect, you're in great shape. You ain't no Heather White. I'm just telling you.
Well, you know what's beautiful is that, first of all, Leo Flowers doesn't follow anybody because the glory is in your story. And as long as you're telling your story, you know you're going to stand out. So I'm always encouraging my clients and the people I work with, tell your story because nobody else has a story similar to yours. And that's how we build bridges instead of walls.
Leo, we're going to go into some of your stories, but you have one fascinating one. I want you to tell the people about where you were when the pandemic lockdown started and that adventure you went through.
Brother, I was in Peru with my girlfriend. We had just started dating, and both of our birthdays are in March. Mine is March 18th. Hers is March 13th. And we were like, let's do something special. We've never been to Machu Picchu. My personal goal is to visit all seven continents, and I had never been to South America, so that made it my fifth continent. I have Australia and Antarctica left. So we go to Peru to hike Machu Picchu, and the day before we're going to hike Machu Picchu, we've been on numerous other hikes, we get a phone call at midnight. In the hotel room, we're like, who's calling us at this hour? This is, you know, I'm a little upset. I'm like, why would you, how dare you? And we answer, and it's our tour guide, and he says, the president just announced they're going to shut down the airport in 24 hours. And the announcement was made like 8 hours ago. So we're in Peru. We grab our things. We hop in the van. We get to the airport, they already shut the airport down in Peru. And so now we have to drive 12 hours from Peru to Bolivia, through Bolivia, to fly out of the Bolivian airport. So we had to hope, one, that our driver was going to stay awake for 12 hours because we're driving through the night. Two, that we weren't going to get hijacked, robbed, because it's myself, my girl, and then 10 other tourists. You know, they're all European, and if you don't know anything about Bolivia, it's a lot of violence and kidnappings. That
we know
there.
Bolivia. We've seen the movies.
Yeah, you've seen the movies. Yeah, a lot of ins and outs taking place right there. A lot more ins than outs. No, not a lot of people leaving when they walk in. And so then we had to hope that the people at the border were going to let us go because the border shut down at like 11 p.m. So we had to pay a lot of people cash. We had just enough cash just to pay our way through Bolivia, the driver, and then we get to the airport. Then we had to pray that they would still be open, that we could still get a flight. And by the hairs on our chinny chin chin, we made it out of there. But the whole time, Alonzo, we are also not only just hoping to fly out of there. We're also trying to book like a private plane. We're hoping that, like, you know, I was like, there got to be drug planes in Peru. There got to be, you know, so somebody. I was like, I got to know somebody in with Escobar, you know, one of these guys, like maybe a boat, you know, or take a scuba lesson. Like, there's got to be a way out of here, boat, plane, whatever. And we found a plane. We found a guy. We're going to charter a plane for $100,000. It was going to be like 10 grand a piece. But, you know, that's how desperate you are. You're like, we'll pay whatever to get out. And luckily we did because, you know, we get back to the States and we, you know, we start looking up the news about Peru. And the people who made that Machu Picchu hike found out that everything was shut down on the way down. So we got lucky. Had we taken that hike, you know, one day later, earlier, we would have, you know, we would have never made it out of there. And people were stuck there for a few months. You know, there was a Facebook group of people stuck in Peru. And so we were very lucky. We were very lucky.
So I only have one question after that story, Leo. When's the movie?
Yes, sir.
When does the movie come out?
Man, we're working on that now. You know, what made me feel safe is the fact that my girlfriend had just taken an FBI hostage negotiation class from a top FBI hostage negotiator, Chris Voss. He wrote this book, Never Split the Difference. And she took his weekend seminar and ended up working with him. So I was like, if anything goes down, I know that she can negotiate our way, because she speaks Spanish also. So I was like, hopefully she can negotiate our way out of this. So I felt like we were in good hands. But, yeah, I mean, it was definitely – the scariest part for me was the fact that we were relying on a driver to stay awake for 12 hours to get us from point A to point B. And, you know, you're driving through windy roads and unpaved roads and dark roads. So, I definitely have written it out and – trying to figure out what the real plot is and all that.
This is Alonzo Bowden. I'm talking to Leo Flowers, comedian, personal trainer, therapist, who happens to date a hostage negotiator and gets stuck in Peru. He's an action hero, people. He's an action hero. More with Leo Flowers coming up. This is Alonzo Bowden, KBLA Talk 1580. This is Alonzo Bowden. The show is called Who's Paying Attention? The station is KBLA Talk 1580. We are unapologetically progressive. We are the only black-owned talk radio station west of the Mississippi. And right now I am talking with Leo Flowers, who is far beyond a comedian, as we've ascertained. He is an action hero. He is living action movies even as we speak. That is a fantastic story of how you got out of Peru. But I want to talk to you about so much more, Leo. So we were talking about wellness and fitness, and you have a journey there also. Can we talk about that a little?
Yeah, in terms of the fitness aspect, you know, I played college football, D1 at Ball State, and, you know, I was 275 pounds, and I lost the weight over a series of years, about 3 years, going vegan for a few years. And, you know, a lot of people, when you tell them how you lost the weight or how you got healthy, they people just want the one thing. It's like, what'd you do? You know, you went vegan, all right, I'll do that diet. What's the workout you did? P90X, okay, I'll do that thing. But the journey has to be much more exhaustive than that. It really required internal work. Like, what you do to get there is not what you have to do to stay there and build on that. So I had to go internal. I had this daily thing that I call GERMS, J-E-R-M-S, journal, exercise, read, meditate, self-talk. And I do that every morning. I wake up, I start journaling, and then I do some mobility work, and then I read something that feeds my soul, that nourishes me. And then I meditate for about 20 minutes, and I post my meditation live on Instagram so people can see that this is what I'm actually doing. Just being able to sit with yourself is such a struggle for so many people. I always want to be busy or preoccupied with a phone or TV or food or drugs. And then self-talk in terms of, how are you talking to yourself? Are you asking yourself questions that empower you or that contract you? And so I go through a series of these every day, and it's really been that internal work that's allowed me to sustain the results and build on top of it. And I had to do all that through a torn meniscus in my right knee and being paralyzed twice. I have 6 bulging discs in my neck from playing college football. So, you know, going through all that without really having insurance, I really had to do the rehab both physically and mentally for myself.
Well, I want to talk to you about that because, you know, you hit on so many things. But the first one I want to ask you about is the discipline. How does a person find the self-discipline to do what you're talking about? And I know once you start doing it over time, it becomes a habit. But initially, even just sitting quietly, I've tried meditation various times in my life, and I have ways of doing it. But to actually sit quietly for 20 minutes, I can't do. How did you find a discipline to do that?
That's a great question, Alonzo. And the first thing I talk to my clients about is that word discipline has a triggering effect, right? Nobody wanted to be, when you were disciplined as a child, you were either beaten or you were told to sit in the corner, or maybe you had soap, had your mouth washed out with soap. So people don't really like that word discipline. So I ask people, what do you want to practice, right? What do you want when you walk into a yoga studio, they go, it's your yoga practice. And the reason why I like the word practice is that it denotes that there is no ending. There's no outcome. That, like, this is something that we're going to continuously do for the rest of your life. So how do you fall in love with the practice? When you look at a guy like Tom Brady, he loves to practice. He loves to watch the game film. He loves to be out there throwing 1,000 passes. And so it's about, hey, what's a way that I can practice this today that aligns with me for right now? So what I mean is, there's some days where I sit and I meditate for an hour. Other days I meditate for 1 minute. Whether it's 1 minute or an hour, they're both equally effective. It's about, what are you doing daily? A lot of us, like when we're in relationships, we think, oh, well, I hung out with my girl Saturday, so I don't have to hang out with her on Sunday. Or I ate well Monday through Thursday, so I could kind of let loose Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And you can't build on top of anything when you have that mentality. And so that's why we talk about a daily practice. What do you want to do daily? And finding a way that it works for you. If you don't enjoy it, if you don't like it, then there are other options. It doesn't have to be sitting and meditating. There are walking meditations. For some people, swimming is meditative. There are journal meditations. So there are so many different ways that we can practice meditation that doesn't require you to sit with your legs folded and, having some moon lamp glowing behind you. So it's all about, just like same way with your diet or the way you eat, that it's different for different people based on their genetics. Meditation and stillness and finding a place of calm. For some people, I know sometimes for me, cooking can be meditative, or folding clothes can be meditative. So it's your practice. And so it's about finding a way that helps you feel centered and grounded in the moment.
I just want to tell you, Leo, just with that last answer, I have a bunch of listeners who are like, this is the perfect husband. This man finds cooking and folding clothes meditative. He's in great shape. He's at peace with himself. Leo, stop it. All right. Stop being so good. I'm sitting here looking at Corn. Corn and I are both like, where did we go wrong?
Well, beautiful thing is, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you, and I've known you for a long time, and to my listeners, I'm talking to Leo Flowers. He's a comedian. He is a personal trainer. He's a life coach. He has a master's in counseling. He's had numerous adventures. So what he's talking about, he's not just talking. He actually lives this, and I can back him up on that. But what about when you slip, Leo? When you talk about doing it daily, but nobody's perfect, right? Talk about that, because when you talk about self-talk, we tend to beat ourselves up for our mistakes more than we pat ourselves on the back for our achievements. So let's talk about self-talk, and let's talk about that day where you did have the pizza or the ice cream sundae or something you didn't want to have, but you did. Now you get back on the horse.
Such a powerful question. When we look at great athletes, what separates a good athlete from a great athlete is their ability to recover from 3 missed shots or an injury. How quickly can you recover and get back on track? It's not that they just keep killing. It's not that LeBron is out there hitting all his threes and all the layups and every free throw. It's that when he does miss, he can recover. And we see that in relationships also. A lot of times, a relationship is built on how well they can recover from those misdemeanors, those slip-ups. Your even your physical health, your mental health, your financial health. How well can you recover from those dips in the stock market, you know, from those purchases. So a few ways that we can manage that, a few ways that we can repair from some type of injury or wound, whether it's emotional or physical or financial or relational, is in asking questions, right? We're talking about self-talk. So a lot of times people think we should be walking around and be like, I love myself. I'm amazing. You're amazing. That's really not effective if it's not authentic. So a more empowering way to approach it is to ask ourselves more effective questions. So to reflect on your day, what was the best part of my day? What was the biggest challenge from today? What am I looking forward to? What made me laugh today? And the reason why we like to ask questions, because what that does is it gets you out of fight or flight mode and brings you into your prefrontal cortex, the front part of your brain that's analytical and thinking. When we slip up, we get scared that we're going to keep slipping up, or especially with food, it's like you have a few cookies, then you start beating yourself up, and then you spiral down, and then you finish the bag, and then you grab more and more and more, and then you start feeling guilty and shamed, and you withdraw, and you isolate. And by asking ourselves more effective questions and asking these questions of our partner also, almost every night, Michelle and I, we spend some time asking each other, what was the biggest challenge of your day today? This is a way of checking in. Not only should you be checking in with yourself on a daily basis, but checking in with your partner so that things don't build up, right? So that things don't, I forget the word I'm looking for, but we'll stick with building up so that things don't build up and you don't miss things. That's why, like, when you watch old movies, the most important part in a family's day was sitting down at the dinner table and checking in with each other. So not only should we be checking in with other people, but checking in with ourselves. And that way we can prevent things that are accidents from becoming catastrophes, from becoming disasters. It's when we try to hide and not share what's going on, whether it's our inner experience or our external experience, that things begin to spiral out of control. We see this in a lot of relationships where maybe the husband's lost his job and now he's afraid to tell his wife, and then he wakes up every day pretending to go to work. Or, you know, people have food habits or addictions and they try to hide it from their partner. Your partner knows. Your partner may not know what you're doing specifically, but they can feel it, because when we're hiding something, right, there's a difference between privacy and secrecy. When we're being secretive and hiding something, then it affects how we show up to our relationship, to our work, to our family, to our friends, and to the world. So you're not hiding anything. It's better to share what's happening and trust that the relationship is strong enough to move forward.
This is Alonzo Bowden. I am talking to arguably the perfect man, Leo Flowers. Leo, Leo, not only am I going to keep you past the half hour mark, okay? I'm not even asking at this point. I'm telling you, you're staying on with me. I'm going to pass you on to Dr. Jashana Johnson and her show, Let's Get Intimate, because you just described what a man is supposed to be doing in a relationship. Leo, this is fantastic. I want to talk to you, and this is going to go into the next half hour, but let's talk about your podcast, because it's so important. Before You Kill Yourself, a suicide prevention podcast, and you talk about, you know, everyone's talking about mental health issues. You've been talking about mental health issues.
Absolutely. You know, playing college football and going through all the different injuries that I went through, and, you know, being paralyzed twice, I've had suicidal ideations, and to this day, you know, I love that you're calling me the perfect man, but even to this day, with all the work that I'm doing, I struggle with suicidal ideations. There are people who have acute suicidal ideations, where there's external event that, where they, maybe they've lost their job, they got a divorce, the wife has taken the kids, and then they also have an injury, and then that makes them want to end their life. And then if people have chronic suicidality, where it's been a voice that's been with them since, it's been with me since my childhood. I told my mom when I was 9, when I turned 40, I was going to end my life. And now because I've done the internal work, I'm 45 and we're still going. And one of the things that led me, you know, besides that story, but the other thing that led me to want to talk about it and do the podcast, because we know that suicidality has this, you know, nobody really wants to talk about. We don't want to talk about sex. We don't want to talk about finances, and we don't want to talk about suicidality. And ironically, those are the things that people are struggling with. And then when it happens, when we go broke, or when you know, you find out your partner's cheating, or someone ends their life, we're always surprised, and it's because we're not talking about these things. We're not sharing our stories, right? So the thing that motivated me to say, I mean, I have to do this podcast is Rashawn Salaam, who was an NFL running back for the Chicago Bears, a team that I would have loved to play for because I'm from Chicago. He was a Heisman Trophy winner, which is the top trophy that you can achieve as a college player. And he went on to the Bears. He had a few injuries, didn't quite become the player that we thought he would become. And at the age, I think, 33, ended his life. And it always baffled me because he was a guy who seemed to have been liked by people, had a great career, even though his pro career didn't pan out the way. Just getting to the pros, I was like, wow, you know, had money, had resources. I was just always confused, and it worried me. Like, if this guy ended his life and he had what I would have asked the devil for, or the genie in a bottle for, then I'm in trouble. Go ahead.
No, I want to talk to you more about this. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. We've got news and traffic. I am talking to Leo Flowers, host of Before You Kill Yourself podcast, and you bring up some great points, Leo, because life, it's never as good as it looks from the outside when you're looking at another person. We have to look at our own lives and what's going on inside, and it's going to be more about that. I'm talking to Leo Flowers, KBLA Talk 1580, 800-920-1580. Join the conversation. There were days I wanted to quit. This is Alonzo Bowden. The show is called Who's Paying Attention? The station is KBLA Talk 1580. The phone number 800-920-1580. I invite you to join the conversation. I invite you to download the KBLA 1580 app where you can listen to all of our shows and you can leave messages, stay in touch through the open mic feature. It's a great way to stay in touch with KBLA 1580. Right now, I am talking to my friend, comedian, trainer, life coach, Leo Flowers, who's also host of the Before You Kill Yourself podcast. Leo, we were talking about people's lives from the outside versus the inside. Someone who appears to have achieved every dream and yet tragically commits suicide. There's a saying, compare and despair, that when we look at somebody else, nobody's life is perfect no matter how it looks from the outside, right?
And this is where curiosity comes into play. A lot of times we look at somebody who's been successful or achieving, you know, like, you know, look at Will Smith, somebody like The Rock, and it's okay. It's perfectly normal to compare yourself and to see like where they are versus where you are. We do that financially or with our neighbors or even with our parents. You know, I'm 45 and I realize I spent most of my life comparing myself to my dad, just wanting to be better than him. And the way we can manage those emotions is to first show gratitude. Show gratitude that someone is achieving some of the things that you would love to achieve, whether they're traveling to a place you want to go, or they've bought a thing, or their marriage. Show gratitude, because gratitude affects our attitude. And then the second part is to ask them, lean into, what's your biggest challenge? When I meet people who seem like they have it all together, one of the questions I love to ask is, what's your biggest challenge? And that humanizes them, because a lot of times they're not asked that question. We're all just walking around assuming that because they have the house and the family and the kids and the career, and you know, they're in great shape, that everything is together. So either we treat them as if we objectify them, or we deify them, or we demonize them, right? But when we start to lean in and ask about what are your challenges, what are you looking forward to, what got you out of bed this morning, right? Because if they truly do have it all, then why even get out of bed? Everything's done. They have it all. So when we start asking these deeper questions and really seeing the humanity in other people, then we start to demystify their success and where they are. And then we have applicable tools and skills on which to build upon.
So now, Leo, I'm going to switch gears. I want to talk to you about comedy because you're a great comic. You're a great touring stand-up comedian. You've done a bunch of TV and appearance on all kind of things. Where does that come from? Because you sound like you got it pretty together, Leo. And as we know, most of us comics, we're a mess. And that's what we make funny. We make funny the fact that we're a mess or something's going on. How does that work with you and your life and your material?
Because I grew up the North Side family in Chicago. And what I mean is that when my mom and dad met and I was conceived, my father already had a family on the South Side of Chicago. It was him, his wife, and his two daughters. And I grew up the North Side family with myself, my mom, and then my sister, who's a half-sister, and she has a separate dad. So when you grow up knowing that you're the North Side family and that your dad has a South Side family and the wife has no idea what's going on, and then you wondering why, you know, you can't call dad, you got to wait for dad to call you, it creates a couple issues, Alonzo. It creates a couple issues. So, you know, when dad doesn't show up when he said he's supposed to, and you're 9 years old sitting on a stoop looking at your watch for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and your dad drives a Cadillac, and, you know, being in Chicago, there's a lot of Cadillacs, it creates a little anxiety in a person. So I'm very OCD about time, and it's caused trust issues within myself and within relationships, and that's something that me and my girlfriend, we're going to couples therapy now to address some of those things. And I'm in individual therapy and I have a sponsor. And, you know, so I realized that the one thing I missed from playing college football was that I had a team. And now I realize what taking responsibility for my life, I have to build a team around me.
So what you're saying is even with everything going on with your meditation and your training and your eating right, you're still broken enough to be funny, which I'm glad to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And the beautiful part is that why we do anything is because of who we get to do it with. There's a proverb that says, what's more important, the journey or the destination? And the master responds, it's who you're going with. Right. When you talk to wilderness survival people and you ask them if you were alone in the woods and you could take just one other thing with you, what would it be? They always say another person. It's not worth it. The journey of life is not worth it if we don't feel like we're doing this with other people. Whether you win or you lose a game, there's something bonding about knowing that we won and lost this together. When you build a business, when you get married, when you have kids, it's that feeling like we are doing this together. It's why so many military guys go back into the military. You know, it's dangerous, but we're doing this together, and there's a purpose and a mission behind this, and it's what gets us out of bed in the morning. So
I love
we need people.
I love what you're saying. And by the way, in wilderness survival, I didn't know you were allowed to bring another person. To me, that sounds like cheating. When they're like, what can you bring? I'm going to bring someone else. Wait, that's cheating. But the interesting thing, about what you said is when you do stand up, it is the one thing. And every other artist talks to us about this, right? Actors, musicians, whatever. Stand-up is the one thing you do alone. When you're standing on stage with the microphone. Now, yeah, we have people. You may have writers. You may have, you know, a spouse, a partner, different, all these people in your life. But when you walk up on stage, you're up there alone.
See, I used to feel like that. And I heard Richard Pryor say, when he's on stage, he feels like the audience is in his living room. And these are just friends and family members. And when I look at the audience like that, it's friends and family and my crazy uncle over there. Like, he's not a heckler anymore. He's my crazy uncle. It excites me because then I go, I get to share my day or this journey with my friends and family. Who doesn't want to do that? It's why we go on to share our story. So being on stage, I don't feel alone. I only feel alone if I go up there and it's more performative than expressive, right? Where I'm just like, you know, maybe sometimes you're preparing for a show or a set and you just have to run the set. Like you there's no room for connection. That's when I feel alone. But when I get to go up there and share my story and my journey, and you get to hear the audience ooh and ah and laugh and take them on an emotional roller coaster, it's empowering.
I have to say, Leo, I've been doing this 28 years. I've never heard it described like that. I've always had I myself and have heard every comic lean into the fact that we are alone on stage and love it that way because I'm in control of everything. Like I'm the director, I'm the artist, I'm the writer, I'm everything else. And the idea of that, oh, this is bringing it to friends and family. I hadn't heard that before. I think that is absolutely fantastic. This is Alonzo Bowden. I am talking to Leo Flowers, who is a life coach, a comedian, a podcaster, just the one of the most interesting, talented people that I know. This is KBLA Talk 1580. We're going to let Leo get some food. He said he got to get something to eat. So I'm going to give him a couple of minutes to get something to eat, and then I'm going to talk to Leo more about life and funny and everything else. This is Alonzo Bowden. The show is called Who's Paying Attention? The station is KBLA Talk 1580. We are unapologetically progressive. The phone number 800-920-1580. And I invite you to join the conversation. I am having a great conversation with Leo Flowers, a friend of mine who is so much more than a comedian. He is a life coach. He's trained as a counselor, as a personal trainer, and I'm finding out he knows about relationship. Leo, you are impressing me more and more with every minute that we talk, and I really do appreciate it. I want to get your take on this study that I read. Harvard researchers Matthew Killingsworth and Daniel Gilbert said that people spend nearly half their waking hours thinking about something other than what is going on right in front of them. Now, you, from what you talked about, you seem to be able to stay in the moment. What is it about us that we're always either worried about something that's coming up or regretting something that's passed or thinking about anything except where we are? We're walking and looking at our phone. We're driving and doing. We're never doing what we're doing, right? Didn't Mr. Miyagi say that years ago?
Well, you know what? You asked a great question, and it's fractals. I break things down into fractals, and what I mean is a lot of times when we are eating, right, we're usually like in our office, in our cubicle, in the lunchroom. A lot of us are at home, especially during this pandemic, and the issue with that is food is meant to be a sensory experience. And because we are eating in these very sensory deprived areas, we're trying to get it all from our food. So if you notice, when people eat at the beach, when they go on a picnic, when you're eating with friends or, in a very nice restaurant, we slow down because the restaurant is providing us a sensory experience. I'm talking about like a nice restaurant, not like a McDonald's or a Burger King like in these nice restaurants, they have, there's music there. They tap into your olfactory senses with, different perfumes or smells coming from the kitchen. They tap into your senses visually. Now they have the open air kitchen so you can see the people cooking. And there's just a sound and a vibe. And so you walk into some of these places and you feel like you're, when you go to a nice Brazilian restaurant, you feel like you're in Brazil. When you walk into a nice Italian restaurant, you feel like you're in Italy. And so it's creating an experience for you. So a lot of times when we're doing things, we've removed the experience of it. When you eat something that you've cooked with your hands, like, you know, the other day I bought an entire fish. When you buy an entire fish, head, eyes, all of that, and then you have to clean it, dry it, you have to stuff it with the lemons and herbs, sprinkle it with salt, and you gotta put it on the grill, a little olive oil, and you have to tend to it. You're gonna appreciate that a lot more than something that, you know, you got through the drive-thru or that you popped into the microwave, right? We've removed the sensory experiences from a lot of things, and so now we're trying to get it from our cell phone. We're trying to get it from Netflix. We're all clamoring to feel alive. You know, when I was younger and you know, I'd be on these dating sites and the girl would be like, I just want to go for a long walk on the beach. And I was like, who is going on long walks on the beach? That's what old people do. But now that I'm 45, I understand it, because it's being on the beach where you're getting that auditory stimulation from the waves, from the birds, maybe some seagulls, kids walking by and playing. Like, your senses are heightened because you're in a dynamic environment. A lot of times when Michelle and I, my girlfriend, when we eat, I say, hey, let's go sit on the stoop. Let's go sit outside. And it immediately grounds us. It brings us into the present moment. And you guys, I'm guilty of, you know, eating and watching YouTube videos also. But it's just me just digging to increase the experience of what I'm eating. A lot of us are just, we have to cram our food in 5 to 30 minutes and then get right back to work. So we don't really get a chance to enjoy it. So we're like, I got to enjoy this. I got to get in as much stuff as I possibly can in this 30 minutes to make this enjoyable, make myself feel like I took a break, when it's actually doing the exact opposite. Because when we're doing more than one thing, when we're multitasking, which some people brag about, you're actually raising your cortisol levels. You're not relaxed. Your shoulders are up by your ears. And then you go, oh, my neck hurts. When we focus, that's all meditation is.
All right.
Look at meditation.
I hate to get involved. You lost me at a whole fish, by the way. You're talking to someone who doesn't cook at all. So right after I bought a whole fish, you lost. No, I'm kidding. I am talking with Leo Flowers. He is talking about staying in the moment and experiencing life. Something that many of us, and I will say this, I got to do that more during the pandemic shutdown because it was quiet. It, whether you wanted it to be or not, it was quiet, and I enjoyed that. We're going to enjoy talking to Leo, and he's going to tell us where to find him, where to follow him when we come back. KBLA Talk 1580. This is Alonzo Bowden. Who's paying attention? You are. This is a man's world, but it wouldn't be nothing without a woman or a girl. Right now, I am talking with Leo Flowers, who just an absolutely fascinating man who has gone through life coaching, personal training. He's an action hero escaping Peru. He's done it all. And in his spare time, he's a stand-up comic. You truly, man, you're becoming some kind of folk legend here. If I had another 15 minutes to talk to you, you'd have followers literally walking around following you. Leo, before we go any farther, I want you to tell people how to find you, how to follow you, and what you do, particularly your podcast, because I love, you know, Before You Kill Yourself is a great title because that grabs people. But the idea of mental health, and again, this the Olympics recently and so many things have put a focus on that, and the fact that you've been focused on it for a while, I want people to be able to find you. So tell them how to follow you on social media and find what you do.
Thank you, brother. So the podcast is called Before You Kill Yourself. It's on all streaming platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and a few others out there. And we post one up at least once a week. And what's beautiful about the podcast, we're not just talking about suicide. We're talking about all, we're also talking about how to help you thrive. So it's one thing to ask you to not end your life and to stay here. It's another thing to show you what you, what to do now that you've decided to stay and continue living. And so we have people talking on about finances, emotional management, relationship strategies and tools of reconnection. And we talk about, you know, physical health and diet and nutrition. So all these things that contribute to living a healthy and wealthy lifestyle. And then if you want one-on-one coaching with yours truly, go to thrivewithleo.com for one-on-one coaching with myself. And, you know, I help people who are just, who are killing it at work. They are, they're accomplishing, they're achieving, but they are struggling to find meaning.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. This is Leo Flowers. The show is called Who's Paying Attention? Please go find Leo because he has something to say and he makes it real. I really appreciate you coming on the show, brother. Have a great day.